from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's opening forum hour, the death toll from the collapse of a Bangladesh clothing factory surpassed 500 on Friday, making it the deadliest disaster in the history of the garment industry. Officials from Walmart, San Francisco-based Gap, and other retailers met in Germany after the collapse to talk about improving safety measures in Bangladesh. We discussed the social costs of cheap clothing. Are you concerned about where and how your clothes are made? Forum is up next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. The collapse of a clothing factory which produced clothing for major retailers near Dhaka in Bangladesh has resulted in over 500 deaths, the worst accident in the history of the garment industry. A fire in a Bangladesh factory killed 121 in November, and the month before, nearly 300 workers were killed in a similar disaster in Pakistan. And all of these tragic occurrences have brought greater attention to safety and health standards in clothing factories. Officials from Walmart, The Gap, and other retailers recently met in Germany to discuss necessary measures that might be taken to improve safety. And in our opening hour of forum, we want to update you on the ongoing story and hear from a number of experts. Joining us first is Renee Dudley. She's a news reporter with Bloomberg News who covers discount retailers and has been covering the Bangladesh factory collapse. And welcome, Renee Dudley. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
I guess the place I'd like to begin with you is just an update. What do we know now in terms of the latest numbers in this factory collapse? And what about, well, I mean, not only the death toll, but what about arrests and responsibility as well?
Yeah, so the latest death toll is now more than 600 people. So far, the building owner has been arrested along with the owners of the factories located inside the building. And also we reported in the past couple of days that a building engineer has also been arrested. The government has said that the materials used to construct the building were of poor quality and that the structure was originally intended for shops and not heavy industrial and manufacturing purposes.
Was this one of those buildings that had been monitored and approved? You know, there's a kind of scandal brewing underneath this about organization that gives us imprimatur to a lot of these buildings, maybe to please the company, and they are just unsafe.
Right, right. Well, that's a part of what was at the center of the debate in the meeting in Germany too, which I'm sure you'll be talking about more. But oftentimes these Western retailers aren't acutely aware of what goes on in the factories that supply their garments overseas. They set up with sort of middlemen who set up with the factories over there, and they're supposed to have inspections. But the labor groups familiar with the situation say that they're often announced when they happen, and they can be quite superficial.
Do you know if anything came out of that meeting in Germany with manufacturers and retailers?
They set a May 15th deadline to come up with an agreement. And we'll say that the agreement that was being debated, the agreement at the center of this meeting, has been under consideration for almost exactly 2 years. In April 2011, after a fire earlier that year, retailers including Walmart, Gap, JCPenney, many of the same ones who were involved in this meeting in Germany a couple weeks ago, met with labor rights groups and international monitoring groups and NGOs to talk about what has to be done. And the labor groups have been pushing for a contractually enforceable memorandum that would require companies to pay suppliers more so that factory owners could afford very basic safety upgrades that everybody believes is needed, things as basic as fire escapes. So the next step will be for those parties to hash out, what they can all find acceptable from that memorandum, and they have until May 15th to decide whether or not to sign on.
We're talking with Renee Dudley, who's a news reporter for Bloomberg News, and it may be shocking to many in the West that none of these factories do not even have fire escapes. Just want to ask you about Bangladesh, Renee, before I let you go. There is a concern and a fear of an exodus. In fact, Disney has pulled out of Bangladesh, and there's some anxiety within Bangladesh about a domino effect, although their finance minister said essentially accidents will happen, and he didn't seem to be expressing much concern about this. But it's a $20 billion industry. 79% of Bangladesh exports are essentially from this garment industry. What do you anticipate?
Yeah, well, it is the industry in Bangladesh, and you know, they rely on garment manufacturing. The primary export, the primary business there. So even some labor groups say, you know, that is, you know, the decision to exit from Disney, and you know, perhaps others, you know, who knows, that's yet to be seen. Is a wrong-headed decision because, you know, they've got to go somewhere. So what's the next country, and will the same things happen there?
Renee Dudley, again, is a Bloomberg News reporter and covers discount retailers, has been covering the Bangladesh factory collapse, which is the focus for this forum hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'll tell you who else is joining us for the hour. Katie Kwan's here in studio. She is Associate Chair of the UC Berkeley Labor Center. Good morning, Katie Kwan.
Good morning.
We also have with us in studio Dara O'Rourke, who is Associate Professor of Environmental and Labor Policy at UC Berkeley. He's co-founder of Good Guide, which offers consumer information on companies and goods to inform their ethical and green buying decisions. And welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we do want to ask you, our listeners, of course, to join us in the course of this hour and let us know if you would pay more for ethical clothing, but also want to talk about just how difficult it is to find the roots and the sources of much of the problems we're talking about here. We also have Ian Maitland with us this morning. He's a professor at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management, teaches business ethics and international business there. And welcome, Ian Maitland.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. I want to begin, if I may, Katie Kwan, with you. We've had you on before, and you've talked in the past about the need for, well, essentially focusing on construction codes and health and safety provisions. We also have problems with child labor. I mean, at this point, you would think a disaster like this, like the great disaster in 1919, would be a kind of lightning rod. Do you anticipate that?
Well, you would think so. After over 600 deaths in this building collapse and hundreds, over 500 who died in the fires in the past few years, you'd think that the companies would be willing to do something different. After almost 20 years of doing this and having these tragic deaths, it's quite clear that something different has to be done. So,
from the companies?
From everyone who concerned, whether it's the companies, the governments, and also the workers. I think that standards that that the companies have been following are much too low. The buildings that collapsed and the fires that happened in the other factories are, you know, were due to the government not enforcing its building codes. And more has to be done so that companies brands that produce their clothing in countries like Bangladesh make the government enforce its own building codes.
What do we do about the fact that, you know, I was reading about the companies like the Gap sending in monitors and factory overseers and everything checks out okay?
Well, sometimes they catch things, but sometimes they don't. And after the fire last November, information came out that the monitors had actually seen wires hanging and so forth and had warned that there was a dangerous condition, but yet nothing really happens. And so you have to say this has to go a step further. So what labor advocates are proposing in this new agreement that PVH has signed on to and others have signed on to says that this should be enforceable by law. And I think we need to go that step so that it's not just voluntary compliance on the part of the brands, but it's actually got teeth in it so that workers can enforce it. The other thing that I think we have to recognize is that workers are not allowed to stand up and complain or say what they think. These workers, seeing the cracks in the building, were told to go back into the factory and work by the supervisors. And the supervisors are supported by these industrial police that the Bangladesh government has that sort of, and there are hundreds of them, they patrol the zones and they make sure that the workers don't get out of line. So the workers, when they protest, fear that, like the textile leader Aminul Islam, who was killed last year, almost exactly a year ago, they fear that if they speak out that there will be retribution against them. So these kind of labor rights violations have to stop. And the brands also have the ability to force the contractors to stop that kind of intimidation.
I don't know if you saw Elizabeth Klein's piece. She went undercover in Bangladesh as a garment buyer and printed the results in The Nation and essentially she met a lot of guys with gold rings. I mean, I'm kind of reducing this, but that's pretty much what she said, who said, can't see the factories. We won't let you see the factories.
Yeah, well, you know, the workers are paid the lowest rate in Asia anyway, if not the world. And somebody is actually getting very rich off of their labor. And some of it are the contractors, but, you know, the brands have made lots and lots of money off of the cheap labor in Bangladesh. And, you know, we should say this is not acceptable.
Let me go to Professor Maitland on this because, Professor Ian Maitland, I know from your perspective there's a lot of subcontracting and contracting. It makes it very difficult to know for retailers. Often they don't know. Well, it's a complicated chain that we're talking about here, isn't it?
Yeah, excuse me. It is a very complicated chain, and that means not that it cannot be audited, but it does become very expensive, and that expense then, of course, may be a deterrent to companies sourcing from Bangladesh and other poor countries that desperately need this sort of investment. So a lot of the options that are being proposed have substantial costs. The audits that are currently underway are asked to do things like, I think, check compliance with minimum or living wage, maybe ensure overtime payments, probably verify hours worked. I don't know about recreation breaks, adequate health care, fireproofing, ventilation, lighting, and now, of course, structural integrity of the buildings, and so on. One interesting comparison is the West Texas fertilizer plant that exploded a few days ago, taking 15 lives. I believe in the past 30 years that has not been inspected by OSHA. So inspection can be seriously problematic, and I think to hold out the hope that we're going to have the right people at the right time to detect the right problems is unrealistic.
It's difficult to know, and I understand that, if they're made in factories and difficult to monitor for safety in places like Bangladesh. But nevertheless, I have the historical memory here, as many of my listeners probably do, of Kathy Lee Gifford lines and Nike.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stocks go up and you have to protect the brand and the image.
Indeed you do. And I know that I think it's Naomi Klein a little while ago wrote about brand bullies. These are brand cowards. They're terrified of having their brands disfigured or defaced by events like those we've just seen. And I think they do lavish a lot of care on this. I believe that if you looked at a lot of the major brands, you'll see they've done a pretty conscientious job of monitoring what's going on. You recall, of course, the fire at the Tazreen Fashion Factory. That appears to have been a factory that was not authorized by Walmart. And one of the downsides, of course, of higher prices or intense monitoring is that they will increase the incentive for some of the companies that are approved and have higher costs to ship the orders out the back door and have them met under much less safe conditions. So that I think we need to be very hard-headed about what positive results we can get and what unintended side effects there may be. Could I just question one of the things that Katie said?
Please.
There's a very moving piece in today's New York Times about a woman called Shahina, who was apparently the last person alive in the ruins of Rana Plaza. And I believe that all of the Bangladesh was transfixed by the effort to rescue her, and tragically a fire swept through at the last moment and claimed her life. The New York Times report says that she actually insisted on returning to her factory, even though her brother-in-law had warned that the building might be unsafe. And she was worried about a day's pay. She said, I'll be absent and I won't get paid for the day. They may delay my month's wages. I need to pay the rent. I need to buy milk for my son. These are not slaves. And indeed, I hope we'll talk about some of the benefits that Bangladesh has derived from this industry.
Well, it's putting people to work successful. Who otherwise would not have any way to put food on their table. Isn't
precisely
it?
Right. Yeah. And the other options are not very attractive. You know, they may be picking through garbage dumps. They may be being maids. Most of them will still work on the land. And the New York Times noted that they will be paid a good deal less.
So if I'm reading you correctly, you're saying it would be a mistake to follow Disney in this?
Well, I hope the companies will not follow Disney. But, of course, in the long run, no solution is sustainable if the companies are not going to be able to make more than they spend. And my fear is that both the potential publicity black eyes that companies have received, will receive, and also the additional costs will persuade them to move not to poorer countries, but probably to countries that are a little bit higher in the chain, where they can provide very safe, much safer standards, but they will also be able to make a profit because those countries have much higher productivity.
Well, let me add here, by the way, the European Union, which is Bangladesh's largest trading partner, said on Tuesday that it's considering trade action against Bangladesh, and now there's a and possibly even restricting European Union markets. Bangladesh's biggest market, and the United States gives Bangladesh preferential treatment. I want to bring Professor O'Rourke, Dara O'Rourke, who's here with us in studio, into this discussion. He's Associate Professor of Environmental and Labor Policy at UC Berkeley, co-founder of Good Guide, which offers consumers information on companies and goods to inform ethical and green buying decisions. And you can find a link to Good Guide on our website, kqed.org/forum. And Dara O'Rourke, what is the consumer to do in the face of this?
Well, so
especially
this,
the consumer who wants to buy green and wants to buy ethical.
Yeah, I think I would add something to Professor Maitland's comment. It's not just difficult to know where your clothes come from for the brands and the retailers. It's basically impossible for consumers to know right now. And that's not an accident. That's intentional. That's part of a global system of outsourcing of production that not only is outsourcing production through contractors to subcontractors to these substandard factories, but that is outsourcing responsibility, outsourcing the responsibility for paying the full cost of production, the living wages, the decent humane wages, as well as the safe and healthy and humane building conditions. And so right now, a consumer has a very difficult time to find out where their clothes even come from. And that's intentional. You can find country of origin if you look on the label. But really, you
it's
have to—
It's intentional because of labor pay, or it's intentional because they want to fool and deceive the consumer?
Well, there is both. And I think, you know, basically it has been don't ask, don't tell, and kind of ignorance is bliss for the big retailers and big brands to outsource their production to countries like Bangladesh, lowest wages in the world for apparel, as Katie mentioned, incredibly profitable. Every brand I talk to basically says their sourcing departments are screaming they got to get into Bangladesh because all the margins are in Bangladesh. Bangladesh went from basically producing almost no garments to the number two exporter in the world, second only to China, because of one thing: low labor costs. There's no cotton in Bangladesh. There's no infrastructure in Bangladesh. There's no technology. It's cheap wages that these brands are benefiting from. So again, I would have a very different interpretation than Professor Maitland. I see the pressure, the reason Shahina went back into the building, the reason the factory managers pushed their workers back into the building after they saw those cracks on the walls was intense price pressure and delivery time pressures from the brands and retailers in the West, in Europe and the U.S., demanding delivery of these products at incredibly low prices on incredibly fast turnarounds. So we've got this intense pressure downward that has been pushing towards these substandard factories and the outsourcing and subcontracting downwards for production.
Let me just mention, by the way, that we invited representatives from Gap and Levi Strauss and Walmart onto the program. They all declined to join us. They all have put out statements. But I'm going to ask you, again, back to the question of consumers and what the shopper is to do. I mean, a lot of studies have shown that they're mainly concerned about price rather than safety or wages of workers. I don't mean to necessarily stand in moral judgment about shoppers here, but this is just poll after poll seems to show this. And you've got $3 trillion global factories ethically in terms of making ethical clothing, tiny fraction of that, 1%.
Yep.
Fair trade labels, less than 1%. So, I mean, all even though there's an uptick now in the wake of a tragedy like this, we're talking about patterns that seem to move against or countervail
it. It is absolutely true that there's incredible pressure among consumers also, particularly in this economy, to find low price products, right? And that's every American is trying to find a good product at a good price. But we also are seeing growth in concern about these issues in every product category. So Good Guide really is a response to growing consumer concern about wanting to know where their products come from, how they're made, under what conditions they're made. And we actually do see real power for consumers. Consumers can make a difference right now. There's things they can do and there's things they can demand. The first thing that consumers can do is to know their products. So you should be looking not only at your labels about where things come from, but you should be using tools like Good Guide to find out more about the brands behind their products. What are their policies? Have they signed the Bangladesh Fire and Building Safety Agreement? Do they have rigorous policies on human rights, labor rights, treatment of workers up and down their supply chain? So consumers can know much more than they ever have before. They need to know their products and they need to know what matters to them, and they should be voting with their dollars.
And they're paying attention to the labels. I mean, where and how they were made, right?
Absolutely. It's really critical. And we really are at a tipping point in the marketplace of much greater transparency than we've ever had before as consumers. I think we're coming out of essentially the dark ages where all we knew before was brand and price. We went into a store and that's all we could know. We now can, with technology, see down to factories and farms, down global supply chains. We can learn from NGOs, from government sources, even from industry, better information on conditions up and down these supply chains. So consumers can know more. More consumers want to know, and they share much more than they have before. But the second thing consumers can do is make demands on these companies. Consumers should be asking the brands they support for full transparency on their factories. We should have clear transparency on every factory that we are buying products from, the factories and their subcontractors. So full transparency and full accountability. In Bangladesh, it's really clear. Brands and retailers need to sign this binding enforceable agreement on fire and building safety. So you should be asking your brands, and I don't mean write a letter to the corporate headquarters that gets recycled. I mean tweet it, Facebook it, Instagram it, Pinterest, whatever. A public question to the brands you support. Where is my stuff coming from? Is it made sustainably? And what are you, my favorite brand, doing to make sure there are no more Bangladesh tragedies, no more Shahina Akhtars who die these tragic deaths that are unnecessary to produce cheap clothes for us?
And I will ask you, our listeners, would you pay more for ethical clothing? I think there's a central question there. But also, you may want to join this discussion and let me tell you how you can do that. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the conversation, or if you have a question or a comment for any of our guests, join us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. Post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. And you can also communicate with us by going to our Facebook page. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The death toll from the collapse of a Bangladesh clothing factory has surpassed 600. That makes it the deadliest disaster in the history of the garment industry. And officials from Walmart, San Francisco-based Gap, Incorporated, and other retailers met in Germany after the collapse to talk about improving safety measures in Bangladesh. We're discussing the social costs of cheap clothing, and we want to hear from you. Are you concerned about where and how your clothes are made? And you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. You can also, of course, communicate with us by going to our website, and our website is kqed.org/forum. With us in studio, Dara O'Rourke, who's Associate Professor of Environmental and Labor Policy at UC Berkeley and co-founder of Good Guide, Katie Kwan, Associate Chair at UC Berkeley's Labor Center, and with us by phone, Ian Maitland, who's Professor at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management. We spoke earlier with Renee Dudley, news reporter for Bloomberg News, and I'm going to read a statement that came out in an op-ed today in Women's Wear Daily from Northern California Congressman George Miller, who wrote, "The reason factory managers keep their workers in unsafe buildings on the verge of going up in flames or collapsing is fear. Fear that the Western brands and retailers will take their orders elsewhere because of a missed day of production, late delivery of a minuscule increase in production costs. The brands know this. That's why I believe they bear the ultimate responsibility for these horrendously unsafe working conditions." And he goes on to say, "It's time that American consumers understand which brands will accept blood on their labels and which will not." And Professor Maitland, get a response from that from you on that.
My response to that is that I would like to see consumers, if they see a made in Bangladesh label, purchase the shirt or slip or whatever. My great concern is what the New York Times, in an editorial yesterday, said, namely that the Bangladeshi government has been reluctant to sign on to some of the contractual guarantees on the part of the brands, because that would drive up the cost of products and encourage Western companies to move to other countries with cheaper labor, and I might say with more expensive labor, but with greater productivity. I don't know if some of the proponents of paying more and of adding some of the responsibilities to corporations for operating in Bangladesh, if they have fully considered the possibility that the brands simply might find it too risky to their reputations because of the hit to their bottom lines, and that they might simply choose to move their business elsewhere. This, I think, would be truly disastrous, given the fact that Bangladesh is in many ways a success story. In my profession, my business, probably the nearest thing we have to a divinity is a guy called Amartya Sen. And he said that Bangladesh was once a basket case, but it's progressed in crucial fields. Among other things, the mortality rates now in Bangladesh are strikingly better than India's, an irony. Women's participation rates are higher, and the New York Times pointed out that more women, indeed there, I believe, are absolutely more girls than boys in the schools. So there are 4 million workers. I think we need to keep that in perspective. Yes, there are a lot of very unsafe plants, and yes, I think there are a lot of things that can be done. Maybe they will grow out of that initiative in Europe at the moment, but I think we do need to keep in mind that this is a very price-sensitive industry. So most of the, despite the mantras we keep on hearing about the profitability of the industry, it is a highly competitive one, which means that the average economic profit is probably close to zero. You've got to have a noted brand or some other source of competitive advantage to be able to prosper. Most of the benefits are being passed on to American consumers.
Now, let me bring in some of our callers here, because they are consumers for the most part. I want to hear what they have to say. Tony, join us. You're on.
Hi. I think there's not enough weight being given to the consumer pressure. If the companies are perceived as having higher prices, and look at JCPenney, you know, the consumers will leave and go to other places. I think consumer pressure is what drives the companies to continually find lower and lower prices. And if consumers think that the prices are too high, they'll go to a competitor store.
There are words.
Yeah, I'd like to take the flip side of consumer pressure. I think consumers, very few consumers in the U.S. are looking for the absolute cheapest product. Not many people shop at the dollar store for all of their clothes and their food. So most Americans want high-quality products at a good price that also match their values. So price matters, quality matters, but so do values. And we actually know consumer pressure can make a difference in these industries, and consumers can make demands on brands, particularly reputation-sensitive brands. In fact, it has been the most effective thing over the last 20 years. Consumers working with leading NGOs, putting pressure on the Nikes and Disneys and Gaps and Walmarts of the world, can get them to change their policies, can get them to invest more of their profits in improving working conditions up and down these supply chains. So consumers can make a difference, and we're not all looking for the cheapest stuff. Americans have values. They care about these issues, and they want to know, and they want to vote with their dollars.
Let me bring another caller on from Los Angeles. Simone, good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, all of you. I'm somebody who's ready to pay a lot more money just to get things that are made that are not made overseas, and especially all those poor countries. We don't realize, but there's even food company like Trader Joe that gives us all kind of things much cheaper coming from everywhere, but we have no idea, not only about the contents in the food, but how this is produced. So I think it's just a question of incentives. I pay all kind of things $10-$15 more, and I'm just making sure it's made in the USA.
Now, let me ask Katie Quine about that. What about just moving toward producing locally? I mean, the brands need to come forward, manufacturers need to prevent future disasters in clothing factories and factories all over the world. But there are some who say, well, if we produce locally, it has an American brand, then that would be more of an insurance.
Well, I'd love to be able to produce locally. I used to be head of the Garment Workers Union, and we would love to be manufacturing here in San Francisco once again. But I think that it's probably at this point unrealistic in this global economy to think that everything is going to be produced locally. So there has to be a mix. Things that can be produced locally, I would support, and I think that community members should support. However, I think that we have to look at the world as our community and also support those in other countries where their labor standards are not as high, where their labor rights are being violated.
What do you say, though, to essentially what Professor Maitland brought up, the fact that there are over 3 million people who are employed in Bangladesh who might really not even have any kind of work whatsoever, despite the fact that the labor conditions may be, from your standpoint, inferior?
They are, but the fact is that wages in Bangladesh are less than half of Cambodia, which is its next closest Asian garment producer. So there is a lot of room for brands to be paying decent wages to the garment workers in Bangladesh. The workers have been working. The example that was cited in today's New York Times, unfortunately, this worker had to choose between putting food on the table and dying. That's not something that any worker should have to face. I think we owe it to her and to the 600 other workers who perished in that building collapse to say that at the very least there should be decent labor standards for all workers, no matter what country they're in.
And let me just for a moment, Katie, get back to labeling locally. Just because it says it was made in the USA doesn't mean the fabric, for example, was sewn here or anything along those lines, right?
No, and it also doesn't mean that it was necessarily produced in compliance with labor standards. There are many examples of sweatshops here in the United States. The Department of Labor has a full-time job going after people who violate standards, whether they're in the fields of California or in manufacturing. Or for that matter, the Texas plant that blew up,
I want to read some Facebook comments from you, our listeners. Ethan writes, if union clothing manufacturing jobs came back to America, I would gladly pay more. This incident is exactly like the Triangle T-shirt factory fire in 1911 that outraged America to the point of unionizing in the first place. Outsourcing has allowed these corporations to return to Gilded Age ethics. It's outrageous. Christine writes, another point to discuss, would the top brass of the company that produces clothing in such a manner take a pay cut to keep clothing costs for the consumer lower? Look at the entire picture. Discuss the system that produces this. You want to comment on that, Daryl Rourke?
Yeah, I think we are seeing more and more people are expressing that they would like to know more and willing to pay more, or willing to, you know, demand the kind of responsible sourcing that Katie was talking about and responsible purchasing. So I think there really is, for more consumers, this first time where it may not be that they can buy locally made, union made clothes, but for the first time, they really should be trying to figure out where their stuff comes from and being able to see down these supply chains to know, is it being produced in a way that is environmentally sound, ethical, humane, and that I can feel good supporting it. And so I think this question for consumers is very similar to the question for brands is, if you want to, you can continue to buy in Bangladesh, products made in Bangladesh, but you should be making demands on those brands that they commit to improving conditions and raising standards, raising wages. If you choose not to buy in Bangladesh, then you need to find products from companies that you can support and that you can see transparently down their supply chains and you can know that they are producing ethically. So we're definitely seeing more and more consumers wanting this information. It's still very difficult to get, but it's something that it's moving in the right direction.
Ian Maitland, if I go back to you before I bring more of our callers and listeners into this, there's an AFL-CIO report that you probably saw that spoke of some rather dramatic and, from their perspective, parallels to be concerned about to the financial self-regulation that helped to bring on the global financial crisis. Do we see a parallel here?
I'm not sure that I've looked at the financial crisis, and I know that one of the narratives is that regulatory failure caused the financial crisis. I'm skeptical about
that. Or lack of regulation.
Lack of regulation caused the financial crisis. But I'm skeptical about that. And I'm also skeptical that inspectors are going to prevent things like the explosion at the West Texas plant. Yes, there are things that can be done, but no, I think the analogy is imperfect.
All right, let me bring more of our callers on. We go to Pleasant Hill. Hava, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, yeah. I have a question if it's just cheap clothing, because it seems to me that everything's made this way these days, Prada, Louis Vuitton, all the way down to Walmart clothes.
Yeah, so, I think that's pretty accurate, isn't it, Katie Quinn?
It is.
So it's not just cheap. Yeah.
Yes, it's not just the cheapest clothing, but it's all clothing. There's a surprisingly small difference between the cost of a blouse that is sold in Walmart and a blouse that is sold in the Gap or higher price stores.
But and thank you for the call. Apropos of that, here's Becca, a listener who writes, and let me go to you on this, Darrell O'Rourke. Target.com has pages on its website regarding responsible sourcing. To what extent can I trust that Target's claims are true and meaningful, and how can I evaluate any company's claims?
Well, so that's actually a challenge that we've taken on, first with a research project at UC Berkeley and then with GoodGuide.com. We basically have a team of scientists looking at labor rights issues, environmental issues, health and safety issues, nutrition issues even, and trying to get beyond the claims on the front of packages or the claims on websites or the claims in retail outlets to what's really going on behind the label. And that turns
and
out to be—
And who's enforcing the monitoring of those claims?
Well, so
do you have an FDA in the clothing industry?
No, absolutely not. As Katie mentioned, we have basically no global system of regulation or governance of the global economy. So we have a problem, really, where U.S. laws don't apply. In
so theoretically, a company could say this is all done ethically and
to
the most green possible
absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. And so we have tracked over 400 different just eco-labels and certifications on products in the U.S. and Europe, over 600 worldwide, some of which are just firms self-labeling themselves green or sustainable or ethical or whatever. And so what you really have to do is look beneath the labels and the claims and the corporate responsibility reports on websites to really what these companies are doing and really not only their policies but their practices and their outcomes and what really is going on in their supply chains. And that, it turns out, takes a research team right now. It's not something simple to do.
So if somebody who's socially conscious who says, I want to buy clothes that are made in factories that are safe for workers has a behemoth challenge, I mean, an extraordinary challenge to try to find that kind of information. And most people don't have the time for it. They want to go in and pick something off the racks and buy it.
That's right. And they're now, though, we are seeing a change. Both we are seeing firms that are beginning to become more transparent. So tiny firms like Alta Gracia in the apparel industry that have become 100% transparent, a factory that you can Skype with the workers, you can find out the wages, you can see reports on health and safety committees, everything, to baby steps forward. Nike, Levi's disclosing their factory lists, becoming more transparent. But we're just, I think, at the beginning stages of a much more transparent marketplace where consumers can know this stuff if they dig deep enough or if they look to authoritative groups, unions, NGOs, groups like Good Guide.
But Ian Maitland, I get back to the point I made earlier. These inspections fall through the cracks, to put it mildly. They're not necessarily done with the utmost thoroughness or transparency as far as the factories are concerned. In fact, I'm looking at a listener tweet here. Our listener says, why can't U.S. importers inspect the plants for compliances before signing and buying the products?
Indeed, I think you're right on all of the above. And you can audit a plant and find that it is paying a living wage, that it is faithfully making overtime payments. But then there are issues like fireproofing, ventilation, structural integrity. I'm not quite sure what single metric encompasses all of those things so that we have some way of communicating to consumers that this is an ethical purchase to make. I think we'll always be second-guessing the companies because there will always be something that's overlooked, something that slipped through the cracks.
I'm going to read some listener emails here because they take us way beyond Bangladesh. For example, here's Margaret who says, I was living in Cambodia where Gap and others moved out. All those girls who had been relatively safe in the garment factories were left without work, uneducated, and unsafe. They could sell peanuts off the tops of their heads or worse. I don't know the answer. If I don't buy, they don't eat. Another listener, Tessina writes, I'm a fashion designer graduating from San Francisco, California College of the Arts this May. I've worked as an intern in a reputable garment factory in India, and even there, any American would have a difficult time with the work environment as compared to Western standards. American consumers simply do not know or understand the social and environmental issues that complicate the fashion industry. People need to consider their consumption and the consequences, get educated, and attempt to make something themselves, create more, consume less. Another listener, David, says, I question the premise that jobs are exported to make cheap clothes to keep our end costs down to the consumer. I would point out that jobs are moved to Bangladesh in order to create greater profit margins for the corporations, especially top-level officers, and I believe they could easily make clothes in the USA again if the corporations and Wall Street expectations were not so greedy. On our website, Beth says, a few years back, some friends and I read a book by Sarah Bongarini titled A Year Without, Made in China, One Family's True Life Adventure in the Global Economy. We have all made a serious effort to not buy clothes made in China, India, and Bangladesh. We all dress nicely, but our clothes are vintage and from thrift stores and made in the USA. Yet I encounter so few folks who profess to be green living who care about where items are made. If it's green and not expensive, folks will buy it. It isn't thinking about the global ramifications, human rights, part of being seriously green. Another listener writes on our website, when it comes to outsourcing, some have asked the question, if capitalists want cheap labor, why not build factories in American cities where poor people are plentiful and desperate? The answer was on display in Bangladesh. It is specifically because corporations want to operate not only cheaply, but without any regulations or accountability. Hopefully, this new disaster will lead to some accountability, finally, but that is not likely. Remember Bhopal, the gas leak incident in India in 1984? The problem is our corporatist system, the corruption it has spawned, and the criminality that persists among its executive class. Go to more of your calls. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mike.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
I'd like to ask the gentleman with the British accent if, one, if he believes there is a problem, because the way what I hear him saying, you would think that everything's wonderful, and the fact that 500 people have to die in a building collapse is just part of the point. You know, it's, you know, keep pouring money in there. Don't question. That's what I get from him. It's almost as though he doesn't realize or admit that there is a problem at all.
Well, let me just correct you. At this point, it's over 600 people who have died. But Ian Maitland, it's to you.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, yeah, I think there are problems. But I think there are problems with some of the proposed solutions, too. And I think that here's my question for you. Let's say that some of these firms decide to quit because they can't stand the pressure, the black eye that their brands take, and some of the higher costs. Then are fewer women going to die in Bangladesh if those brands pull out? And the answer is no, that more women will die because the factories, despite in some cases, appalling safety records, tend to be safer places and tend to provide higher incomes for the workers in these countries. So I think the morally right thing, I think Simone is completely wrong on this, the morally right thing and the economically right thing is for us to maintain trade with these countries and for this investment to continue. If we give foreign aid to a poor country, you feed it for a day or a year, but if we trade with them, we feed them for a lifetime. And they are developing a self-sustaining industry. Yes, there are some really ugly flaws that disfigure it, and they need action, and I believe that we can, that there are steps that can be taken, mostly smart steps, that can significantly alleviate the problem. And please, while we talk about the 600, don't forget what an egregious case that was. In the you know, some of you have read the details of the behavior of the Rana Plaza owner, Sohel Rana. He'd been warned by his engineer, his building engineer, that the building should be evacuated. The police had issued an evacuation order. The Bangladeshi Garment Manufacturers Association had told Rana that the building was unsafe, and yet he persisted. This is not part of standard operating procedures, even in Bangladesh. So while it's good that this case focuses our attention on the problems, don't for a moment think that this is representative.
It's Professor Ian Maitland, and we go to Professor Dara O'Rourke.
Yeah, I disagree completely with that point. I think that there is a major problem. It is a deep systemic problem that is driven by the brands and retailers at the top of supply chains, and they are benefiting to the tune of billions of dollars off of this system. So to assert that the solution might be worse than the current situation, I think, is not only disingenuous but is damaging to these workers and workers around the world. These brands are going to move. They're going to move to the next low-wage country. We're already seeing movement from Bangladesh into Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. We saw the movement from China to Bangladesh. They will move again. It won't be because labor rights and improved conditions. It will be because of pressures downward on price and delivery times. So these brands and retailers either need to leave, but leave loudly and make a clear statement like Disney that they're leaving because of conditions and they won't produce there until conditions are improved, or they need to stay and invest in improving conditions.
Otherwise, it's just a shell game.
Exactly. So as a brand or as a consumer, quite frankly, it's the same thing. We are best when we are active citizens, not passive consumers. The brands and the apologists for them to say, hey, there's nothing we can do, it's just the situation in Bangladesh, they need to step up and be active citizens. You can buy or you don't buy, but you have to take action. You have to speak loudly. You have to take collective action, whether it's a consumer tweeting about it or a brand making demands on the Bangladeshi government to enforce their own laws, to step up and say, we are here, The Gap, Walmart, H&M, the big retailers, and we demand you raise the floor here of conditions so that we're not competing downwards on immiserating workers and putting workers' lives at risk.
I agree. You know, I have to say that a lot has been said about the cost of doing business. And the cost of doing business should include safe and healthy working conditions and pay that is decent and the right to organize a union if you want to.
All those are embedded in the United Nations Human Rights Charter.
Right. But the idea... there you have it. The idea is to get it enforced. And that is exactly what this agreement that labor advocates are talking about right now calls for, is legally enforceable language so that people, that companies aren't just voluntarily doing it if they please or not doing it if they don't please, but rather they are held accountable to the law.
Katie, let me ask you, because so many listeners want to know about labor costs, say, of a garment compared to the sales cost, and they want to know how much of the price increase is actually passed on to the consumers, how much would cost for more safety if, for example, you passed on a dollar extra cost to the consumer. Would that make the difference?
It would make a very, very slight difference. If a dollar was passed, are you talking about if the wholesale cost of a garment was raised a dollar? Many companies could absorb it. Other companies would pass it on to the consumer. I think that Dara has made the point that consumers are willing to pay for ethically produced products, whether they're garments or foods or other kinds of products. So the increase to the consumer would be negligible.
What about the cost of making the garment as opposed to the cost when it goes on the shelf? I mean, the labor costs as opposed to, I mean, for example, a Bangladesh company will spend how much roughly to make, say, a T-shirt as opposed to what it sells for in the department store?
The very basic rule of thumb is kind of a 1-2-4 multiplier. So if a shoe or a garment costs $10 to produce, kind of the cost of producing and getting it to the U.S., the wholesaler, the retailer might charge $20, and then the consumer might pay $40. So you've got 1-2-4 along the way. So
although that ratio has increased in recent years.
It has. And so profit margins are big for the brands and retailers. The brands, the people doing the marketing, the design, the sales are where all the profits are right now in these supply chains.
A listener named Mike who says, why all this focus on consumers? It's the stockholders who ultimately determine about decisions. I mean, you're nodding your head there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this deep systemic problem, there's a lot of blame to go around and there's a lot of responsibility to go around. And I see the brands and retailers, the publicly traded firms at the tops of these supply chains are really critical. And we've got to figure out a way to motivate them to source responsibly to pay the full cost of their production. And so that's going to come from consumers. It's going to come from NGOs and labor groups. And it's going to come from shareholders. And we have seen over the last 20 years, with focus on these brands, you can move them.
Let me read a listener, Susan's comment. She says, it's not just price but quality that suffers when products are made in Asia. Land's End clothing used to be made in the USA, no longer, and the quality suffered. Substandard materials, inconsistent sizing, a disaster. Other companies at that price point have suffered over the past few years. What can we do to bring quality back to the United States? Let's face it, labor taxes and government regulations make it impossible to produce quality clothing at an affordable, not bargain basement price. Can we reach a compromise? I'm willing to pay for quality. But where is it? We'll leave it end on that note. Let me thank all of you. We will continue to monitor this story, obviously. Appreciate the fact that Renee Dudley from Bloomberg News was with us earlier. And the three guests we had, Ian Maitland from University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management, and Dara O'Rourke from UC Berkeley, Associate Professor of Environmental and Labor Policy, co-founder of Good Guide, and Katie Kwan, Associate Chair of the UC Berkeley Labor Center. And we thank you, our listeners, because we wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Another hour ahead, we're going to talk about the New Testament. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.